Welcome to The Leap with Japa, the podcast that bridges continents and connects stories. Join us as we dive into the vibrant world of international education, explore diverse cultures, and share the extraordinary journeys of students far from home. Whether you're dreaming of studying abroad, or already embarking on this adventure through other means, Leap with Japa is your companion in navigating the exciting, challenging, and transformative world of global education. Let's leap into today's episode. Hello, welcome to today's episode of Leap with Japa. This episode today would outline a Twitter space that I did recently, and the agenda of this was to go over the F1 to the green card process. However, I broke it into multiple space, of which the Saturday one that I ran is the first one. In this episode, you're going to hear an overview about the F1 process, the F1 student visa process, and preparing for grad school. There are some new things that I shared in here that will be useful. I hope you find it as enlightening as it did for the people who listen to it. I'm going to be doing more of this series as well. I would also like to announce that we're going to transition into video podcasts. I'm going to be releasing the videos of the interviews that I've done. So next month is the month of May. I'm going to be doing a special episode with Dr. Casey, who is currently in Canada. And we're going to be talking about his leap into the Canadian airspace and how he got settled in Canada. But it's going to be a full video episodes. The episodes are no longer going to be broken into three parts. You're going to get a full 1.5 hours or 1 hour video and audio. It seems that there's a lot of request for video type podcast series. So starting next month, I'm going to be releasing every Monday, video podcast as well as the audio. It's going to be a full length, and then subsequent episodes will all be video and audio. So enjoy this Twitter space that was done recently. I hope to give you more insights. This will be one of the few ones that will be the last audio only. Starting next month, we're going to jump into full video and audio. Thank you very much and enjoy this episode. Okay, I think I'll just start with the people here. I don't want to waste your time. So I have Stephen and Sharif as my co-hosts. So they would direct traffic. So I'm just going to say, if anyone has any questions right now, you can let me know before I start, and then I can just cover that, and then I'll just start line. But anyway, so welcome to this Twitter space. My name is Saheed Adepoju. I currently Stephen, you have the questions, go ahead.
Yeah, just a very quick one. Welcome, everyone. Just so that they are very sure of what they're doing, do you want them to come up and speak or just drop the messages in the chat box?
They can come up and speak. So, yes. Yeah, so you can ask to speak, so that way you can get your questions more concretized and contextualized, because I might miss the context of the question, so it might be best to get them to come and talk as opposed to putting it. Yes. So the agenda for this would be, I'm just going to talk about the F1 visa, what it's used for and what it's probably not used for. I will also talk about how you transition from being a student to working an internship or full-time. I'd also talk about the H-1B process, the CPT process, and also now talk about how you transition from the H-1B to the green card and any other opportunities that come up living here. Also open to discussion is, you know, what is it like living here? Because you now have, you know, a lot of people that have probably completed school, you know, and, you know, what do I do? What is the next thing that I hope to do? So for me, I came to the US in 2015, August of 2015. I came to do grad school. Prior to coming to do this particular program, I had applied to about 4 business schools, because my assumption was I needed to go to an Ivy League school. There's nothing wrong with Ivy League, but one of the things I've actually noticed with potential students is they assume that they have to go to a particular top school to be successful. The short and long answer is no, you don't. Not because elite schools are not good, but because the environment here and the companies here cannot discriminate. They cannot give opportunities to someone that went to, say, Harvard or Stanford over someone that went to a community college, for example. That is by law discriminatory. You can't give more opportunities to one set of people over the other. So right off the bat, the set of 4 schools I had initially applied to were needing $250 for application fees. And I had paid $1,000 for that, and I didn't get into any of those schools. And I assume there are lots of people like that that have tried grad school in the past, aimed for top schools, did not get in, and assumed that, you know, the world is over. One of the myths that I want to break today is, as long as the school is accredited to give out degrees, it's fair game. You can get into them. You would have the same opportunities. There's a huge advantage if you go to an elite school, and the biggest advantage you have is the network that you would get. But there's nothing stopping you from creating your own networks. So there are people that have created their own networks over the years, and they're fine. People that did not go to top schools. Because think about it, there's a population of 330 million people in America. Not everyone goes to a top school. Do you have to assume that, you know, only a subset of people go to a particular job because they went to a particular school? So the first myth is you don't have to go to, you know, don't assume that because I didn't go to Stanford or Harvard, I don't have a shot at making it in America. So that's the first thing. So someone eventually advised me that it is best to always apply to your strength. And he, you know, eventually did apply to a master's in computer science, which is, you know, my background is an MBA. So, and besides, I don't even like management accounting. I don't know how people do accounting, but I hated accounting. So I couldn't, there was no way I would have passed an accounting class in an MBA class. Anyways, so I got into, Prairie View A&M University to do a master's in computer science. I paid only $50 for the application fee. So I paid $250 for other schools. Here I am paying $50. And, you know, so the first thing I want to talk about is the F1 student visa process. So the F1 is for students, and F2 is for dependents of the students. And one of the things that you have to understand is there are certain criteria that you have to meet prior to being given this F1 visa. Now, most of this are all, they're all subjective, so they're not objective. But one of the criteria is they want a situation where you would first complete your program.
you know, so the visa officer is talking to you and they want to know if you are a bona fide student. How do I know that this person in front of me is going to go to the US and is going to do what they said they're going to do, and they're going to complete their program, and they're going to come back? Now, the last bit of coming back sounds funny, but you have to be able to convince them. Most of the visa officers know you're probably not going to come back if you get a job, but they need to see the potential of you coming back to your home country. So how do they do that? The first thing is they want to know how many, in their mind, how many schools do they apply to? A bona fide student, there are about 5,000 schools in the US. Why would you apply to one school? If you wanted to maximize your opportunities, you would apply to schools in different parts of the US. So you'd apply to schools in the East Coast, you'd apply to schools in the West Coast, you apply to schools all around the coast, everywhere in the South. So a red flag sometimes for them is if they see just one application. So, you know, unless, you know, sometimes they also say, oh, my brother and cousin went to that school, that's why I'm going to that school. So, but why do you want to go to that school? So you have to be able to tell them why you are going to that particular school. And there are lots of factors. One of the things, and this is something I found out while going through the process, visa officers absolutely hate when you mention school rankings as a reason for going to that school. I'll tell you why. If you're speaking to a visa officer that went to a community college and then went to a state school, got into the State Department, and then became a visa officer, you going to Stanford and saying it's, you know, I'm going to Stanford because of the ranking, how does that process in the mind of the visa officer? He knows his country. He's lived in the US all his life, or most of his life. And here you are telling him that, I'm going to school because of the ranking. So in his mind, like, what about my own school? I mean, you can go to any school, because he got there without having gone to an elite school. So you have to understand that ranking is marketing. That is the gist. If you mention ranking, I can get any marketing company in the US to write a story about a school, come up and publish a document about the best schools in an area and pay the company, and I'll be on a good ranking. So that thing is not subjective. So you have to be able to give them objective reasons why you're going to a particular school. And what are those reasons? Every single school, grad school, and this is for grad school, also probably for undergrad, every single one of these schools have access to research. Why don't you mention the research that they're doing? And research means that you have professors that do research. You can mention that and say, hey, you know what? I found this professor that was doing this great research. I'm also interested in that research, and that is why I picked that school. That's a more plausible reason to give for you to go to a particular school. So that's one advice. Always give actual evidence of why you want to go to a school. Don't give them fluff. Don't give them an overview or what you think. And the reason why research is very paramount is you can start a program in a particular school and that professor decides to move schools. So I've had a professor at UC Santa Cruz, for example, who started teaching at some place, and he or she moved to UC Davis. And what typically happens is that they take the students with them. So you can imagine someone that started at a particular school, but because they've started research with them, they are moved to another school. So you can move, you know. So and I have seen situations where a teacher started at a first-tier university and moved out to Harvard or Stanford, and they brought their students with them. So it is not an objective, it's everything is subjective. So that's the first thing. Always mention a particular research, especially as a grad student, that's the reason why you chose the school. Another reason why you should pick a particular school, and a lot of people
overlook this is cost of living. Every single thing you do should revolve around, can I afford to live in this place? You don't want to get a school in California and you're excited about how much you're going to be paid, but you realize that 75% of that money is going to be going to rent. How is that going to be a good experience for you? And I know this because in my current PhD program at UC Santa Cruz, they pay very good money, but one bedroom, a single bedroom shared, you know, among students is $1,800 or $2,000. You're getting $3,000 every month. So you're paying $2,000 on rent and utilities. And, you know, so cost of living is very paramount. You know, so, research is good, but I need to know if I can live there. How much am I going to earn? How much of my income is going into rent and living expenses? Because if you can't eat, how can you study? You're not going to be able to do that. So you need to use that as a factor. And cost of living has to do entirely with what state you are in. So typically states on the coast, just to give an idea, East Coast, West Coast, New York, California, very expensive because, you know, of their cost of living. The schools in the South are cheaper. So Florida, Texas, yeah, they're good. Midwest, Midwest would be things like, well, forgive me if I miss all my geography, but states like Idaho, Wisconsin, Wyoming, all have schools and they all have research. So that's a place you can go. And so that's another realization. You have to know if the money will go a long way. There's something called taxes, so you have to factor in that. And then you have to figure out, am I living in a state that has both federal and state tax, or am I living in a state that has just the federal tax? So that's another assumption in terms of picking a school. Then you come down to the different types, two types of schools. So you have state schools. So my preference is always go to a state school. There's nothing wrong with going to a state school. They have professors, they have research. And the funding for research, even that the Harvards and the Stanfords and everyone do, they all go to the NSF, the National Science Foundation. That is where most of them get their funding from. So be aware that, you know, I might go to Stanford or Harvard, but the little guy down the street that went to a state school is getting the same kind of funding for a professor's research. And typically your expenses, your cost that is paid, your salary that is paid to you comes from this funding. So that's what the visa officer is looking for. So first of all, you tell them, hey, you know what? You know, I did research. I found a professor that did great research. And then secondly, a very good reason to give a visa officer why you selected that school is I can afford to go there. The living expenses are not that as high. It tells the visa officer that you have done your research. So they say, oh, okay. So that makes sense. You need to eat. You know, school is not free. So that's the first thing. Also, so the process goes like this. You apply to a school. So once you get the school, you have to show the school that you have enough funding to go to school. So typically, they give you an I-20. The I-20 details how much you're going to pay for the length of your program. I believe it's for the length of the program or per year, one of them. Once you get your I-20, your I-20 is a result of you showing the school that you have the fund for that. Then you go online, you fill up the DS-160. A caution, please always fill up your own DS-160. The U.S. consulate actually frowns at people using agents. They have said it over and over and over again. If you're going to grad school and you're smart enough you should be able, for the love of God, fill up your own DS-160. Do not pay an agent to fill up your DS-160 because you don't know what the agent has filled for you, even if you sit down with the agent. So for the sake, I always advise, always fill up your own DS-160. It's not complicated. It will take you roughly 45 minutes to an hour. So I have someone wanting to... You have a question?
So just to be very sure, do you want them to ask the questions, I mean, while you're talking, or...
Yeah, that's fine.
You want them... Oh, okay. No problem.
Yeah, I can stop. I can always pause, and then I can just go back. So it makes it easier that way. So, again, you don't have to listen to me all three. If you have your questions, ask your questions. I will answer your questions, and I'll just go back to what I was saying. So, yes, Doshima, you have a question? Go ahead.
Hi, Saheed. This is actually my first time on Twitter Spaces, so I thought I was just putting the mute button on. I didn't actually have a question because I just joined, but thank you for hosting this and happy to be here and listening.
All right, thank you. Saheed, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
She didn't have any questions.
You can just mute yourself. I'll just continue.
Okay.
So, what was I? Yeah, about the F1. So, fill up your DS-160 at all times. Please do not use an agent. If the agent was that good, and this is the joke they make at the embassy, if the agent was that good, the agent would be in the US and not be filling forms for people. So, do not assume that they know what they're feeling. They do not. And another thing you need to understand is whatever you feel, once you feel a DS-160, what typically happens is an FBI background check is done on whoever it is that you're filled, and they get a report back. It's a standard practice for, I think, any federal forms that you fill. They do that in order to just vet the people. So if they go and put in details that you don't know anything about, you can get in trouble. But of course, they're not going to just tell you anything. They're just going to deny you. So just be aware of how, you know, and that DS-160 form is as good as standing in front of a US judge, raising your hand and saying, "I told the truth in this document." That's why they can deny you based on perjury or lying. So they take it as a federal document. Anything you fill is subjected to scrutiny. And if they find out that you're lying, they don't take it. It is better for you to explain in that document. So when they ask you, "Oh, why were you denied a visa?" critically explain everything in details. Because the people behind the screen are human beings and not robots, they would listen. But if you lie and you think you can deceive them, they will find out eventually. The time always catches on. So just be aware. So once you fill up the forms, please prepare for your interview. Typical question is one, why do you want to go to the US? Always have a comprehensive answer. Don't tell them, "I want to go and study." And, you know, then they're going to ask you, "Okay, so what school?" "Oh, I'm going to do school." So you have a comprehensive answer. So that's the F1 visa process in a nutshell. The next thing is, you know, you get the visa. What is the next thing that you do? The first thing you do once you get your visa is to contact the school. Always let the school know that you got a visa and that you're coming. Give them a time that you're coming. What they can help you do is to organize transportation to pick you up from the airport, or if they cannot do that, they'll put you in touch with either a student body that can do that and, you know, bring you over to campus. The next thing you also do before you leave is to figure out your accommodation. Please do not assume that you're going to get crashed into someone's house. "I have a friend." Yes, it is very possible you have a friend. But I can guarantee you that friends also pay bills. So you don't want to be a nuisance to someone. So make sure you do your own planning properly. Do not assume. Do not assume that you are just gonna, you know, gate crash someone's house. So the next thing you do is to figure out where you're gonna be living, where you're gonna be staying, who you're gonna be staying with, and for how long. Please establish that as much as you can. It gives you a baseline, and if things change, there's nothing wrong with things changing. Always just let them know that, see, I know when I got here, X and Y happened, you know, this and this happened. Please, if you're going to be carrying cash, carry under $10,000. Do not try and carry as much cash as you can fit into your box. They will, even though you are allowed to carry more than 10,000, you have to tick the box that you are carrying that, and you must have a valid explanation for that. The reason being is they just want to make sure you're not doing money laundering or some sort. So those are the checklists. So what happens when you get here? When you get here, it depends on the time of the year. Make sure if you're getting here in January, please don't buy jackets in Nigeria or wherever you live. Just buy the jackets here. The jackets are not going to be enough to keep the winter out. Trust me, people that have lived here for decades don't like the winter. The winter is not going to be nice to you. So anything that has to do with clothes worn during the winter, buy them here. If you're coming in August, same thing, still get a jacket. Also, make sure that you've sorted out your accommodation and how you're going to get there. Use Google Maps a lot, you know, find out how do I get from the airport to this place, and then from this place. Know how far you are from school. How am I going to get to school? Remember, you're just coming for the first time. You probably do not have a vehicle, so you need to answer the question, how do I get home? How do I get home from school, or how do I get to school for classes? You need to figure that out before you get here. Yes, there will definitely be people that will help you settle. So be aware of that. It's always also good to have an idea of the community of where you're going to and reach out to them prior to coming. Don't get crash any community. Everybody's busy. And you know, everybody's, you know, especially students, there's always stuff to do. So be mindful of the people that are going to help you settle in, that they also have a life. But I can guarantee you, they are willing to go overboard for you and to help you to succeed and to settle in. So once you do that, once you figure out where you're going to be and then you land, the next thing that I typically would advise is try and figure out what classes you're going to be taking. So, you know, you've come in, you're excited to do a grad program. Please find out what classes you're going to be taking. Find out what times of the day those classes are. You should have done this before coming. You should have an idea of, am I taking two classes? Am I taking three classes? Word of advice, please, once you land, make sure you go see your school designated official, your DSO. Your DSO is, permit me to use the word, your DSO is your God as a grad student. Anything you do reflects back on your DSO. And the designated school official is there to give you cover. They are your allies. But if you upset them, they would be the biggest enemies you would ever have. So, like, you would know how to pay homage to people. Always walk in to just say hello. To go and see, hello, hi, how was your day? Sit down with them, talk to them, have coffee with them. because they know a lot about the immigration. They're technically immigration officers on campus. And DSOs were invented after 9/11. So, you know, that's the people that track people that move from one school to another. You know, prior to 9/11, you could come into the U.S., jump from this school to that school. And the reason why they started having DSOs was clowns that did the 9/11 came in on one student visa and moved to another school to go to flight school. And nobody was tracking that. So they take DSOs very, very seriously. DSOs can immediately flag you. So if you're out of status, if you don't go to class, if you have been, ejected from school, the DSO just immediately clicks a button on the website. They have access to immigration website and immigration is notified. Nothing might happen, but at least immigration knows. So a couple of people I know have been out of status and they didn't even know. You know, they didn't go and talk to the DSO. I'm in America, they're going sightseeing and they ignore the number of classes, or they took classes, they said, oh, I'm going to just take an online class this semester. Well, you cannot take an online class as an international student. You can take an online class plus other classes and then clarify that with your DSO. If you don't, he or she will just mark it as, I didn't see this person, and your trouble starts. So make sure you see the DSO. So make sure you know the number of classes you're taking. This is important because most people that I know sometimes will start a program and the graduate coordinator, for example, looks at the transcript and says, I don't think this class aligns with this class, so you're going to take an undergrad class to make that requirement fulfilled. Be watchful for that. That can be a problem. So if you can insist on the classes you want to take, again, these people are human beings. They cannot force you to take classes you don't want to take. Make sure you take classes that you can pass. So ideally, there are usually two types of credit load. School systems. There is the semester-based system and there's the quarter-based system. So I've been through two of them, so I know there's a slight difference. In the semester-based system, a year is made up of two semesters. So you come in August or September, that's the fall semester. And the January is the spring semester. So that's typically what most people are aware of. If you're doing a semester-based system, your credit load is typically 3 units. So 3 units, and you have to take a minimum of 3 classes, which is 9 units. So be aware that if you're in a semester system, the typical minimum number to fulfill full-time status is 3 classes. And now 3 classes seem like it's not that much, but it is a lot. So be aware that you're going to take at least 3 classes in a semester-based system. Now, for a quarter-based system, which is what I'm currently under, you take 2 classes, but a class is 5 units. So you need to take a minimum of 10 units per quarter. But a year is made up of 3 quarters. Remember, a semester is made up of 2 semesters. A quarter is made up of 3. So a year is made up of 3 quarters. So you'd have it, and these quarters follow the weather. So you have a fall quarter, then you have a winter quarter, and then you have a spring quarter. So that's how they do their system. So be aware of the differences. So in my PhD program, I had to take only 2 classes. 2 classes doesn't sound a lot, but trust me, 5 units, 2 classes, it's a lot. So for a semester system, the minimum is 9 units, which is three classes. For a quarter-based system, it's 10 units, which is 2 classes. So be aware of how many you need to take and make sure you know the classes, you know, that you're taking. You can insist that you don't want to take a class. So don't let anyone subject you to saying you need to meet a requirement and hereby you need to you need to take this class. So, because the reason is because any extra class they give you to take is not free. So that's why you need to insist. It's not a free class. You have to pay for it. Now, once you get into the system, the next thing you need to worry about is you need to get a job. And let me rephrase. You need to get a job on campus. So F1 isn't allowed to work outside of campus for the first year. So the first two semesters or the first three quarters, you are not allowed to work outside of the school. But on campus, you're allowed to work a maximum of 20 hours. Now, these schools that are pro international student, meaning they get international students a lot, they know the rules. And one of the things you need to know is you would need authorization from your DSO to get what they call a social security number. But in order to get a social security number, sign off by your school DSO, you need to get a job. So make sure that you are aware of where these jobs are. So the typical kind of jobs you can get are one, if the organization is on campus, you can be work as a dishwasher. You can work as a janitor on campus. Nothing wrong with those jobs as long as it pays the bills. You can also get job as research assistants, as teaching assistants, and as graduate assistants. So, teaching assistants. Now, every single grad program has graduate students. Graduate students, think about them as free labor. And I say that because professors love free labor. They have funding for a lot of things. And one of the things that they love to do is to delegate their teaching assistants to do teaching in some classes for them. So, but these things are very competitive. So you need to be proactive. And I'll give you this scenario. Imagine that you were in Nigeria or wherever country your home country is, and you wanted a teaching assistant, and you waited till you got to the US and asked them, I need a teaching assistant, you know, can I get a job? I don't think you will get it, because you have to want it bad enough for them to say, hey, you know what, this is the job, take it and just stop disturbing us. When I got my student visa, I called a professor every day for maybe a month, and I left voice notes on his phone. They got very irritated the moment I landed in the school. The guy goes, oh, you're that guy, he's waiting for you, just go get your letter, because you've left us a huge amount of voice notes, voicemail. Just take your problem and go. So you have to be very, very proactive, because it's very competitive. Funding goes away immediately. So one of the things I'll tell you is, once you know that you're going to the US and you're coming, look for a professor that has graduate assistantship. Send them emails. If they don't reply, call their phone numbers. Call them till they get tired of talking to you or receiving your messages, and say, okay, fine, when you get here, we'll give you something. If you don't do that, you would lose out. So, quick pro tip. I was told by someone at the U.S. Embassy, and, you know, speaking of U.S. Embassy, let me give you this pro tip. The U.S. Embassy has Education USA. The Education USA is, I think, $100 or $200 to become a member, and they advise you on coming to the U.S. The biggest pro tip you can get from a U.S. consulate person is they give you every single insider details about getting a student visa. When I mean everything, I mean everything. So, you heard it here. If you want to get if you want to kind of get your student visa quickly, be an Education USA member. They are the consulates. They meet, I believe, in Lagos. It's every Wednesday for free. You can go in for free. So they were the ones that told me. So they gave me this scenario about looking for work. They said, imagine if someone in China was calling another Chinese professor at 3 a.m. in the morning and leaving voicemails and sending text messages. Who are they going to give a job? You that has sat down in your chair and raised your leg and saying you want a job, or the Chinese guy that keeps on emailing a Chinese American professor for work? Don't give him first, because you didn't want it enough. And then the funny thing is that when you get here, you're now upset. Everyone has taken the job, but they were not sleeping looking for work. So that's the tip I would give you. Disturb once you know the professor has funding, disturb them. Also, another pro tip, look for the teaching assistants in their lab on LinkedIn. Look them up, send them messages. Find out if there are openings, find out if there's funding. They will usually tell you and say, yes, he has funding. Okay, thank you very much. And then you keep bombarding the professor. So that's looking for work. Once you get that job, you then need to go to the school DSO, this designated school official, who will then write a letter to give to you to take to the Social Security office. And that's how you apply to say, hey, this person is a student here. So that means you're in good standing with the DSO. They get your details, and then you apply for a Social Security number. Once you get a Social Security number, you are in the system. And that's a big deal. Let me let you know this. If you come to the US on a B1, B2 visa, you will never get a Social Security number with that visa status, as long as you're on that status. So about working, oh, I'm here on a visit visa, I want to work, all of you going to school, you are not going to get that Social Security. It's just the way the system works. So I'll pause now. If you have any questions, if there's anyone with a question, feel free to request the mic. I will bring you up. You can ask the question. While I'm on this point, I have a podcast where I iterate a lot of what I'm saying right now. So if you want to listen over and over to me talking about the same thing, you can subscribe to the podcast. It's Leap with Jakpa. It's on Apple. It's on Spotify. The website is leapwithjakpa.io. So that's L-E-A-P with W-I-T-H J-A-P-A.io. It's on all Apple, Spotify. I've also released a video podcast of one of the best interviews I've done in recent times with Dr. David Adamo. And you know, that's up there to give you inspiration. So I will pause now. This is the segment of understanding the F1 visa. The next segment is talking about OPT. So I'll pause now for questions. So if you have any questions, please come up, and please have some questions. Thank you. So I'll just pause for a minute. If you prefer to just type your questions, you can retweet the space with your questions, so that I can simply just answer them. So if you do any form of retweet or quote the space with your questions, I'll answer your questions.
And just in case you cannot speak, you can drop the questions in the chat box. We'll definitely treat them as well.
So hello everyone. Maybe I should go on with the first question. So Saeed, one problem that many people face is the issue about funding. Like, how do they start off? Like, it gets overwhelming for some people. Where to start from, the first steps to take. So let's say someone from this space now decide that, oh, I want to go to the US. What is the first step?
Yes. Thank you for the question, Sharif. So one of the first steps you should take is to look at the department you're going to. So there are three steps. There are three layers to funding. The first layer is research funding. What is the availability of research funding to a particular professor? So, you know, you would do a cursory scan of the department's professors, pick their names, and, you know, Google search them to read some of their papers. Cursory glance, you know, you're not looking to do an in-depth insight into the professor. So figure out what kind of research they're doing. Once you know the kind of research they're doing, if you read if you read the references, there'll be portions of the references that might state where funding for this research came from. So look out for that. Once you're able to see that, search, they will usually give you the name of the funding. So search for the funding. So, okay, this research was funded by DOE, Department of Energy, Department of something. So pick that, search that, and find out if it has funding. When you do the search for that, it will usually tell you who the principal investigator is, who the co-PI is, and then you would know that they have funding, because the NSF page will tell you how long the funding is for. So that's your first bet, knowing, okay, this funding was given in this year and it expires in this year. So you know what year you're in, you know how much money they have left, so he has funding for research. And then once you know he has funding for research, you then ask yourself, do I have enough skills based on the papers I've read to add value to this professor's research? Once you know that, then you start applying and start asking questions from his research assistants and everything. So that's one layer. That's the first layer. It's usually somewhat an easy layer, because if you have the skills or you've written paper in that field, it's easy for the professor to say, yes, I want you to come as, you know, as a researcher. The second bit is graduate assistants. Now, graduate assistantships is typically funded by the department. And one of the things that you need to know is those kind of fundings are very, very limited. Need basis. It's more like a first come, first serve. That's the word. It's on a first come, first serve basis. So they have a limited amount. So what do graduate assistants do? They are the ones that probably stay in the computer labs. They're the ones that will do support. Sometimes you have some support. So that's the second level. That level, you need to ensure that the money doesn't run out before you ask them. The last layer is teaching assistants. Now, sometimes teaching assistants are connected to a professor, because the professor is teaching a class. So typically what happens is that the departments will send you to a professor that needs someone. So it's also kind of department focused in terms of the amount of funding that they need, the funding that they need for that, because the teaching assistant doesn't come usually from the research funds of the professor. It comes from the department. Also, there's also another one, which is a mixture of teaching assistant and research assistant. So the money would come from the professor himself, but he wants you to teach rather than do research. So again, that's connected to availability of funds from the professor that you're attached to. So I hope this kind of clarifies how you should go about funding. Any other question?
So guys, please come up if you have questions. Tag them in the chat box, or definitely respond to them. So I think while other people are actually thinking of questions they actually have, I would like to ask a question as well. So just could you just kind of just shed more light on this? What do you think is like the best? So if you're trying to get funding, let's say you're in Nigeria and trying to get funding for, your program here, coming to school and everything, how do you think, what's like the best set of skill set you think you should have? Not being particular to a certain research, like a generic set of skill sets that you should have as a graduate, so that you can possibly attract as much funding opportunities you can get from the school.
Okay, great question. So you need to have very great communication skills. Communication skills are very vital, irrespective of the field of study. So you need to be able to express yourself properly to your students. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of schools ask for the TOEFL exams. Because it's more like a rigid standard. So a lot of people get upset when they ask them, hey, I go to an English-speaking country, why do I have to take the TOEFL? The TOEFL exam is like a standard by which, they know that you can communicate. And most of the TOEFL scenarios that they give you are student scenarios that you can hear what other students are saying. So that communication matters because they measure that. So good communication skills. You should also know that you need to have good writing skills, good writing etiquettes. So please, no short forms, no WYD kind of, communication style. It's frowned upon. People don't talk like that. You don't see someone and say WYD. I don't even know what that is. And it becomes a problem if you have that kind of ingrained mentality about how you should communicate. So you have to be able to communicate and write effectively. In terms of if it's a STEM program and you want to do research, you need to be able to do probably basic statistics. You can analyze data, not necessarily using a programming language, but maybe probably by Excel. So sometimes some people come in and say, I don't have a programming background, but, do you have a statistics eye for things? So can you look at data and crunch data, using Excel, not any kind of programming language, it's just using Excel. So that's vital for that kind of, for what you want to do. If it's a non-STEM program, the soft skills I mentioned are more vital. You also need to have good research skills. So how well can you use Google to do research? How well can you use it to find information that you're looking for? You need to be able to figure out, your internet terrain. And also another critical thing that you need to know how to do is critical thinking. You need to be able to critically assess things, not necessarily from an emotional point of view, but you need to be able to look at the pros and the cons of things and make yourself or the person you are listening to come to a conclusion based on all those points. Most of all this back and forth conversations happen with professors. You use those kind of skills to have conversations. You need to also have good networking skills, so you can't be isolated. You can't be an isolationist and say it's just me by myself. You need to be able to mingle with people, talk to people, have conversations with people. Those are all soft skills. So the soft skills is usually almost greater than the hard skills. Definitely that's a very, very important skill to have. I hope that answered your question. If I've missed anything, so those, at least based on what I know.
All right, thank you so much.
Any
other questions?
Any question? you can request a mic. I'll bring you up and you can ask your question. Okay, I don't want to keep everyone here, so I'm going to do another segment for about 10 minutes, and then we can open up for final Q&A so that okay, so I think we have someone. Yeah, feel free to ask your question, Web Guru 01, go ahead.
Sorry, I thought it was in my personal account. I'm Tade. I'm a student already.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think the major issue is no one actually told. Of course, you don't get to hear most of these things, like start emailing your professors about graduate assistantship or research assistantships before you get to campus and all that. And getting to campus, you hear. In fact, most of the available jobs will tell you they are booked for the next 6 months. They are booked for the next 18 months. And it's a problem because without the jobs, you can't get SSN.
Yes.
So, any advice?
So, your question is any advice?
Yes, because I think the alternatives I was being told was the alternative just to get a state ID for the moment.
Right.
And wait till the job opening comes up.
Okay. To get an idea of what state are you in?
Boston, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, okay. Yeah. What kind of program is it? STEM program, non-STEM?
It's a STEM program.
Okay.
But it's more like a professional.
Okay.
Certificate degree. National diploma, yeah.
Okay, so it's not a master's program?
It's not a master's program. It's under a master's program, but it's not a master's program.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Okay, so one thing you can do is, are you in the fall? Are you just starting?
Yes, spring semester.
Okay, so you start, spring. Yeah. So another thing I probably need to mention is that spring semester funding is usually... Every single school starts their school year in September, August, September. So, and that's when the funding is decided. So what you're facing right now is a situation where the funding has kind of dried up because they've been booked, and the next funding that you will get is either in the summer or in the fall. So that's a slight drawback for starting in the spring. That said, what I think you should do is you should reach out to the professors themselves and, you know, have a, you know, set up a meeting with them, have a one-on-one talk with them to discuss what's going on and, you know, find out if they can refer you to even any other professor. So one way to find out from the professor is whatever class you're taking with them, make sure you are very good in the class so that you can have a reason to want to talk to them. So pick out your favorite professor. You probably know one or two professors. Then, secondly, talk to the DSO office. The DSO office also typically has funding for assistance. So have you been to the DSO office and seen students work at the DSO office?
Yeah, I think so. Over here, it's called, I think it's called OGS.
Yeah. Office of what, sorry?
Global Services.
Yes. So you should reach out to them as well and say, hey, do you have any openings as well for an assistant? Because if they have students that are there, you know, students are graduating, so, you know, spaces open up. So you should talk to them. So that's an opportunity as well. So also on campus, I had mentioned earlier that you could, so if you have a Burger King or a Chick-fil-A or student services where people go, or the cafeteria, you can ask them too.
Yeah, I did. I actually looked into most of those. They're like, summer is a slow semester. A lot of people don't do summer. So many of them are afford to hire more people till the fall and all that.
Yes. Yeah. So that's
That's a typical, but hang in there. There's opportunities pop up once in a while. You just have to be bullish about it. You know, so you have to want it bad. So look for the professors, look for the ones that is it a school that does research?
Yes.
Okay, so if it's a school that does research, then that means there's funding. So make sure you do that. Yeah, Stephen, you had your hands up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a bit of, you know, you've said a whole lot. Web group, what school is it exactly, if you don't mind sharing?
Nothing, Stephen. It's
Xabi. Oh,
yeah, Xabi.
You can send me a message after the...
Okay.
So I think another thing you should do is you really have to develop relationship with the people. So in this state, for and for I don't know, at Northeastern, you have more international students, and a certain population actually get most of the job. I mean, I really don't want to call a certain country, but I mean, they get most of the job. So you have to develop that relationship with them, so you can be aware of opening. Because sometimes when they are openings amongst themselves, I mean, nobody knows. They just discuss it amongst themselves. The current people there tell their bosses that, oh, I think I have someone that I want to replace me. I think the person will be good enough. And they just go ahead and apply and definitely get the job. So you need to create a very good relationship with other people, not just the people from your country. And also, I mean, while creating that relationship with them, you're trying to ask them questions, I mean, about opportunities that are possibly arising within the school. But just in case, I mean, I have a couple of people at Northeastern. You can text me. I will definitely know what we can do as well.
Okay, I think you're on the AGSA group, so I've sent you a message in your DM.
All right, no problems. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Stephen. I hope I was able to answer your question, and I'm glad that you got immediate help from Stephen, who is able to give you some pointers. So, yeah, any other question? To just highlight, I think what I'm going to do is, so as not to take too much time for, I'll just cover the F1 process in this space, and we can catch up again probably next week and try and make it a recurring thing so that way it's not going to be information overload for everyone, because I have so much to share. In the meantime, if you must, there is a podcast that I run. It's called Leap with Jakra, and it has 15 or 16 episodes. I think 16 episodes right now, and I cover a lot on this with different people. So I have interviews with people that are here. So Stephen, you're yet to accept my invite for an interview. So
no problem.
You're coming on the podcast when the time is right.
No problem.
And I've interviewed quite a number of people, current students, people that I've also helped in the past to try and transition into tech. So I'll be more than happy if you would just go on the website, leapwithjakra.io. On there, you can join the mailing list. I send out an email every Friday, and every Monday you get also get an alert for a new episode that has dropped. Monday's episode is ready to go. So Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think you can also post the most recent episode of your podcast, so people can also listen. I mean, some people might not be willing to going out all there to type it. Maybe you could just post it here on the space, and then people can easily go through it from here.
Yes, I will post the most recent episode, and the most recent episode was the time it's titled Graduating for Success, Timing Matters. Because one thing I've noticed is a lot of people just assume, oh, I'm just going to graduate in January, but there's a science to the best time to graduate. So I cover that in this episode, which I am going to drop right now. So it's on Spotify. The link I gave and dropping right now is on Spotify, but you can always check that on Apple and also other podcasting websites where you can podcasting applications where you can search for Leap with Jakwa. So that's LEAP with WITH Jakwa JAPA. So what was I on? Yes, so as I said, I'm gonna make sure that this doesn't overwhelm you. So the website has that. I have about, let me check the number of episodes. It's currently at 16. So we do one every Monday. So Monday is going to be another one, but you can catch up on 16 episodes. And most of them cover what I have mentioned today. And there might be extras. I also have interview series where I break an interview into three episodes. And you can follow that episode. One of the best ones that I have released, best interviews, is with Dr. David. And the video episode of that podcast is currently up on YouTube. And you can also look for that on the website. So you just go to the video section of leapwithjakwa.io to see that. So I will wait. Do you have any other question? Web guru, any other question?
No, I think that's basically most of it.
Okay, so the time check, I would end this in 15 minutes just to let you know. So I would try and complete the F1 visa, I'll do that for 10 minutes and I'll give the last 5 minutes for more questions and if you have any. So going into the student experience, once you get your SSN, so prior to doing all of this, what are the things that you need to be aware of? So the first thing you need to be aware of is you need to open a bank account. So a bank account is necessary because that is where you get paid, and you usually get paid by direct deposits. So please get a bank account. Also, don't get too excited about, don't just think you need to open any kind of account. Please ask them if there's a monthly charge. The last thing you want is for you to put in your small $500 and every month they're charging you a $5 fee, and in no time your money just goes down to zero. So please ask them that, see, I'm a very poor international student and I would like an account that does not charge every month so that you don't go hungry. So make sure it's one that does not have a monthly charge or a service charge. I would advise, I don't have a particular bank in mind. I bank with Wells Fargo. I am shamelessly a Wells Fargo customer and I've refused to open another account in 9 years that I've been here. But I've heard bad things about Wells Fargo. So please, Wells Fargo, if you're listening, nothing wrong with your bank. I still bank there. You can open, there's Bank of America, there's Chase Bank, there's a bunch of banks that you should make sure you please open an account. Secondly, make sure before you open an account, make sure it's a place that can receive mail. So you will need to be able to receive mail and to have mail in your name, you know, so maybe a light bill or a phone bill. I would also advise, as you know, international students, do not get contract phones. You don't need them. The phones that you have are unlocked. You can walk into Walmart or go online to Cricket. I think Cricket is owned by Walmart. I think so. Okay. And you just get a SIM card. Get a SIM card where you can load monthly so that you can save yourself some money. You might not be able to qualify for a contract because they have things like credit checks and things like that. That's a whole, I'll dedicate another whole episode to all of to credit and debit and all of that financial stuff. but please get a phone line. Make sure you also get a phone line. What else? Make sure you get a bill in your name, either the water, the gas. Make sure that you know where your meal is delivered to. So be very critical and be very security conscious that mail theft is a thing. Don't assume that everyone is. So make sure you pick up your mail regularly. Once you have a bill in your name, a bill from the bank, then you can start. The next phase would typically you start trying to get a driver's license. One thing you should be aware of in America is that you should always have a form of ID on you. It's the law. It helps you to be able to identify yourself. So if you don't know how to drive and you are here, you can get all this bill. So you get a bill in your name, you get a phone bill, a light bill, or bill from the bank. The next thing would be to open a state ID. Get a state ID if you don't drive. If you do drive, get a driver's license so that you don't have to walk around with your international passport as your follow-up ID. And trust me, I can guarantee you need to walk around your international passport if you don't have a form of ID. You need to be able to identify yourself. Not because anything is going to happen to you, but because it's for your own good to have a form of ID. So in order to stop walking around with your passport, make sure you get some form of state ID, so driver's license or state ID. And then once you do that, the next phase would be to enroll yourself into, start the job. There's typically an orientation process that you would go through. So, make sure you know when that time is. Find out from your boss what is expected of you, because it's not free money you're working. In exchange, typically for working on campus, you get a tuition reduction. So in US schools, you have resident fees and you have non-resident fees. Resident fees are people that have lived in that state, or typically Americans, or Americans or green card holders are residents, so they pay a particular fee. Non-residents are typically people from outside of the state. So even people that have been born in the US sometimes but did not live in that state will pay non-resident fees. And then sometimes non-resident fees and international student fees are the same, sometimes they're different, and then there's the fees for the international students. Once you get a job on campus, they will usually just give you, you usually pay resident fees. So be aware of the fees. Make sure you pay your bills regularly, because, your light bills, your phone bills, so that you can, stay connected. Know how much, get an idea of how much you feed every month. That's why I mentioned initially that you should know, you should know the cost of living of the area you're in, because the salary they pay you now has to go into the cost of living. So be able to know exactly if the money you're collecting every month can pay your rent and can feed you. Once you can get feeding and rent sorted, you're good as an international student. You are well on your way to be successful. So you know that worst case scenario, I'm going to have a roof over my head, and I'm going to be able to eat. So once you can figure those things out, you're good. So this is 9 more minutes. So if you have any questions, comments, feedbacks, please raise your hand and feel free to ask a question. So this segment is just going to be for today. Next week, we're going to do how you transition into getting an internship and what you should do and things like that. So I wouldn't overwhelm you. So I usually had like 4 segments. So I wanted to overwhelm everybody, but it seems that that's not a good idea. So I'll pause now for questions or comments. while you're thinking about coming up, please don't forget, please do follow me on X here, or whatever Mr. Elon calls X these days. Follow me on here, and also please follow, there's a Twitter handle for the podcast, Leap_Jakwa, so please follow that. I also post on that. Also, don't forget to join the subscriber mailing list for the website, leapwithjakwa.io. Everything I share is at no fee to anyone. I'm doing this as a passionate project, so feel free to sign up. You would get updates every Friday and every Monday for what I do. So it's I read the, based on Steven's insights, I shared the recent episode on graduation. And this episode kind of covers when is the best time to graduate. Do I graduate in the spring or do I graduate in the fall? So I outline the advantages and disadvantages of graduating at, you know, each of those times. So if you have any questions about that, I can answer that as well. Or else I'm just going to wait out. So time check, we have 7 minutes to go. And I'm using the last 7 minutes for questions or comments, and also any insights you might have. Steven, do you have any insights regarding your experience so far as a student? I was going to ask.
It's mixed feelings, nothing too special and nothing too boring, because I think it's very good what you're doing currently. You are giving people more insight as to what they should expect and what they expect us to do as well. Coming into the US, I think it's very important that people have this prior knowledge and do not come here and make certain mistakes. Because, I mean, when you make those mistakes, sometimes it seems as if it's not, you know, kind of repairable and stuff.
It's usually not repairable. Once you miss it in a way, it's almost guaranteed that you're gonna have a very sour US experience. You're almost gonna hate yourself.
I agree with you. So for my personal experience, I mean, I didn't have anyone I was talking to before coming, and I think I messaged a couple of people, you know, I could reach out to, but fortunately, I think a week before I got into the US, I was able to talk to someone, and I asked a whole lot of questions, even though I had made prior, you know, I had paid for the house rent and the rest, but I had a couple of people, I mean, I asked them questions, and I think I got a very good idea of what I wanted to do. So my first few weeks, aside classes, I was trying to learn, I think, the unwritten rules or the tenets of living in America. And I got one very good advice from a man I had a lunch with. He told me that there's a golden rule, that those with the gold make the money. And I asked him, what's the gold? And he told me, get all knowledge and experience as much as you can and make meaningful relationship. So, because he told me that you're only as powerful as the people around you.
Yes.
This is very important. So I decided to do the very best, and that's what I'm currently doing now. I mean, I'm doing a PhD, so I have more time. But I think for the time being, I've been able to gather enough experience, learn from people, create wonderful relationship with people, and truly enjoy the time being. And I know I haven't told you this, so I just got elected as the president of the African Students.
Congrats.
Thanks. So I think I'm just dabbling into so many things, and I think it's really giving me the avenue to learn about people more. I mean, people from different backgrounds, because you might think you're coming from a very different background where you think you should be pitied at all, but trust me, nothing comes out of pity here. Nobody gives you things because you're meant to be pitied. The word that struck me so well when I had a talk with the head of the grad school, he told me that the only reason why you're here is because you deserve to be here. So I changed my perspective about how I saw myself, because I felt like, oh, maybe they were trying to fill a quota, and that's why I was brought in here. But he told me that you deserve to be here, and that's why I'm here. And it tells a lot. It's a testament to the fact that success compounds a whole lot. So it's the previous success that has brought you thus far. So that means if you're in the process, you're in the pipeline, or you're currently here, be rest assured that you're only here because you've made very good decisions that has resulted to your current situation. So I think the only thing I would just say is to keep pushing, move on. Storms will always come. One thing I know for sure is this: anything, if you can sleep and wake up every single day, then you don't have a problem. Trust me. No matter what it is.
No matter what it is.
You can sleep and wake up every single day, you don't have a problem. Trust me.
Yeah.
So that's just it. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. I would ask my brother Sharif to give his own thoughts if he is available. So what would be your own closing thoughts? We have 2 minutes to go to end the space. And again, remember, next week we're going to continue with this. So Sharif, are you there?
Yes, I am.
So what is your experience after I dragged you to grad school?
Well, to talk about my own experience, we're going to need like a whole like 4-part episode, because it's really, really long.
Yeah.
But anyways, for my closing, since we just have 2 minutes, I just want to encourage everyone, the people that are here that are not here in the US, I just wanted to let you know that it's still possible. You don't need to have all the money in the world. You can still work, no matter how big your dream is. It's achievable. You'll be surprised the kind of information and access you can have, even just from in Nigeria or any part of the world, and coming to the US. You'll be surprised what you can have access to. And the support here is, I mean, at some point it gets even overwhelming. You will almost be like, oh, what do I need again? Because everything, it's just sorted out. So trust me, just all you need is your dream and your drive. And one thing I've learned coming here is, as long as you're hardworking, you can achieve anything. Like, it's that simple. That's just it. Trust me on that. So, I mean, that's all I can say. And I just don't want to go into my story. If not, we just go on and on and on and on. Thank you, everyone, for making it today.
All right, Augustine, are you there?
Hello, sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I thought, Sharif, yes, thank you. I'm supposed to still drag you for an episode. We know why you're very busy, so I'll allow you to graduate first, and then we can talk about your episode. But yes, as we come to a close, please remember that you all have an opportunity to make a difference, you know, with your dream and drive. So do not take your drive for granted. Do not look down on your dreams either. I came in 2015 when I didn't know it was possible, but I'm doing this because I was also given great information by people that were here. But I've realized that information is not in a structured form, it's not distilled properly, and there are people that want to talk about the experiences, which is why one of the best episodes I did was with Dr. David. And he knocked it right out of the park, where he gave brilliant insights. And you should take a look and watch and listen. So I have it as a 3-part podcast episode, but I also have it up on YouTube right now, where you can watch how he talks about his experience as an international student and how he learned a lot along the way. So the website is leapwithjackpot.io. Please join the mailing list. I send out information every Friday and Monday. Friday is just to give updates of what's going on. Monday is you get an alert for the new episode that has been released. And you know, you get to listen to either an interview or an insight from me. For every month, we have a 3-part interview series. For next month, I am doing an episode. I'm releasing an episode on leaping to Canada. What is that step like? You know, what is that experience like? And it's probably possible that perhaps I'll start bringing these people to this spaces so that you can hear from them after I release the episodes. That's probably an idea. So that's coming out in May. For June, I interview a principal engineer at Facebook who has been here since 2010. So he's been here almost 14 or 15 years. And he outlines his experience as an international student and gives advice. I have an episode that is recorded with someone that currently works at the World Bank. She came here as an international student, an undergrad. She's currently with the World Bank. Someone I've known since she was 5 years old. You know, so I've interviewed that. There's another interview that's going to come out with a career coach. My own career coach that I have used, a great episode in him discussing why you need a career coach and what a career coach can do for you. And that episode is monumental because it will help you if you are, you know, you've graduated and you want to know what you're going to do after you graduate, and how do you grow in the system. So this series is going to be an expanding series where I'm going to probably introduce other countries so that people can tell us how you do. For me, I'm going to talk about the U.S. experience. I'm going to talk about how you grow in the U.S. There'll be episodes on finances, on how do I buy a home, how do I do a business, how do I save more in taxes, how do I expand my horizon, having kids, you know, buying a car, selling a car, doing business. So the possibilities are endless. So I hope that you would, you know, join me on this journey together. Go on the website, leapwithjackpa.io. That's leapwithjackpa.io. Go on there, you know, join the mailing lists, watch the videos, watch the podcast, and also feel free to follow me. So in the absence of any more questions, next week we would do the same space at the same time. And one of the for next week, we're going to talk about the OPT and the CPT, getting an internship. That is the aim of that episode. So I'm here now, I'm settled. How do I get an internship? I'm going to go over all of that. There's an episode that covers that already on the podcast. If you go through the list, you'll find it. But I'm doing this one to get people's live reactions. So I hope you will join me again next week at the same time to do this and to get more people involved, more people to know about this and to help others, just like we help our web guy today. So thank you very much. I will end the space in 5, 4, 3. Any questions? Anything?
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Leap with Jackma. I hope it brought you valuable insights and stories that resonate with your journey. If you have any thoughts to share, questions, or want to send a voice note with your feedback, please visit our website at leapwithjackma.io. You will find a contact form there. I would love to hear from you and feature your voice in a future episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, some of which are Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Player FM. Your subscriptions and reviews help us grow and reach more listeners, and I truly appreciate each one of them. Also, check out our merch store on leapwithjackma.io website for some cool t-shirts and hoodies. Perfect show for showing your support for the show. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll dive even deeper into the experiences and challenges of international education and careers. Until then, keep leaping forward, and thanks again for being part of the Leap with Jackpa community.